This text is from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 22, and it's a story that's told in all three synoptic Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, suggesting it is more than vaguely important. Then the Pharisees went and took counsel how to entangle him in his talk, and they sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you're true and teach the way of God truthfully and care for no one, for you do not regard our position. Tell us then, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why put me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the money for the tax." And they brought him a coin. And Jesus said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" They said, "Caesar's." Then he said to them, "Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." And when they heard it, they marveled, and they left him and went away. Well, it's sort of tempting, if you're the preacher, to curry favor with the flock by answering the question, is it lawful to pay taxes? Well, no, not if it goes against God's will. Tear up your W-2s, forget about capital gains. Let's start a libertarian movement. Except this text is only tangentially and at best illustratively about taxes. It's actually about ethical decision making. And I'll get to that point, but it's going to take me a minute in this meditation that I entitle, "When No One's Looking." When no one's looking. A couple of years ago, I was doing a segment in my introductory sociology class that I do every semester. It had to do with, how do you figure out what are the odds that you have got or going to have an upwardly mobile, materially comfortable life? What are the odds of living well? The answer to that question is really another question when you think about it globally. Will I have a materially comfortable, upwardly mobile life? The answer to that question is the answer to this one: who's your daddy? In other words, where and to whom have you been born answers a lot of the questions about life chances. And then you have to say, well, how well did I do being born? Wait a minute, that's just random chance. And then I posed the rhetorical this way. I said, how much work did you do to avoid being born in Syria? It's a couple years ago. And I just let it go. And at the end of the class, a young woman who I had not noticed before, sat more or less in the back wearing a hijab, came up to me and said, "Syria is my home. What did you mean?" Took me back a little bit. And I said, I meant that your country is being horribly ripped apart by warfare. And there are people in your country that are dying or can't get out for no reason other than they were born there. And it's horrifying. So I kind of got out of that. And later I was sort of reflecting on that, and I thought how much courage it took for a young woman to come up to someone who has authority over her and against whom she has almost no recourse, and sort of call him up short on, what did you mean in the disrespecting of my homeland? Sort of on the defensive, I wasn't meaning to be etc. And then it occurred to me that I record all my lectures and put them on the internet, and I wonder if I'm going to get in trouble for this, you know? So in the coming semesters, I've done that same segment, but said something to the effect, how hard did you work to not be born in a war-torn, famine-stricken country? And you can pick your own, right? Well, we make all of our decisions, including the illustrations we use in our conversations, based on what we value and what we stand to gain or lose. There are values and interests at stake in almost every decision that we make. What will help us or hurt us? Interests. How does this reflect what we most deeply believe? Our values. The little thing I did with Coop and Cody a minute ago is actually rooted in an educational program called Peace Builders, and school districts buy into this and teach their children to build peace by asking larger questions when faced with what to do next. Will I get hurt? Will I get in trouble? Sort of interest-based questions. Will it break property that I don't own? Or will it hurt somebody else? What values inform those kinds of questions? And all of these things, the answers to which build peace, because the answers are sort of obvious. You go through a reflective process, and then you decide based on the larger questions that go beyond the specifics of the incident. Well, a lot of this comes to head in a movie that's out now called Wonder. And it's sort of gotten lost in the buzz over Three Billboards and Star Wars and others. But it's about a fifth grade kid and the fifth grade kids he goes to school with. And fifth graders are terrible at decision making. Have you noticed this? And that's just because they haven't had much practice, right? So the movie is about fifth graders learning to make decisions about how to cope with a kid who looks really different through an accident of birth, really. You know, do I jump on the bully bandwagon because I gain from that? I gain, you know, props from people I think I want props from. Or do I come to realize that when you jump off the bully bandwagon, there's this notion of, this deeper notion of friendship behind it? And that's the thought process that carries these kids through the film. In the middle of it, the teacher has what he calls the daily precept, in other words, words to live by. And one of them is this. It's actually a quote from Dr. Wayne Dyer, and some of you may have read some of his work. The precept is, when faced with choosing to be right or to be kind, choose kind. That's the overriding value for building peace, at least in this context. Now, all of what I've been talking about today, values, interests, weighing decisions, asking questions that answer other questions, are basically in full view of other people. I think the more profound question is how you apply that process to when no one's looking. Do I do the right thing, or what's right now, even when I don't have to and can get away with it? An interesting thing happened about 3 weeks ago. We had the grandkids from Austin were in town for a week, and we took them to the Science Spectrum Museum. Came out of the museum, got the kids buckled in, sat in the car, and Jeannie said, "What's under the wiper?" And it was this piece of paper, and I thought, oh, somebody's got some ad thing, right? Well, I undid the, you know, got the paper in, and it was, "I'm sorry I hit your car." And there was a name and a phone number, the name of an insurance company, and the insurance company's policy number. I went, whoa, that's nice. And, you know, the process played itself out. It was $600 or $700 damage to the car. It took me almost no time to get this done. I was without the car for a day, and the other insurance company paid for a rental for that day. Zip, zap. And I'm going, what insurance company is that? Wait a minute. But I also had to confront in myself the question, what would you have done if you had hit the other car? I think I would have gotten around to the note part, but it wouldn't have been my first instinct. I would have asked myself, how can I get away with this? And then, wait a minute. And now, if it ever happens, I have no choice, right? It's just no question at all. You write the note. But here's the reason I think I would have gotten around to it anyway. And now we're going to go back to the text. They ask him a question about taxes, which is a trick question. And Jesus asks the far more interesting question. Whose image is on the coin? Whose image is on the coin? In other words, to whom does that coin belong, in a sense? And my mind immediately goes to Genesis, where in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and then he created man and woman in his own image. Implied by the question about the coin is the much larger question, whose image is on you? In whose image were you created? Your face is the literal face of God in this world. So when faced with an ethical dilemma, when no one's looking, to whom do you belong? And what does that mean? Whose image do you carry? And as soon as you answer that question, you will inevitably. You'll do the right thing, even when no one's looking, because his image is on you, in you, and works through you, even when no one's looking. Amen.